Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I am Kenneth Amendori, and I'm joined today actually with a returning guest, someone who hasn't been on the show in quite a while, though. So it'll be a real treat to speak with him again. It's been almost 2 years now since we last spoke. His name is Brandon Smith. He's a writer and an activist in the Liberty Movement. He's been doing this for over a decade. And he's the founder and chief strategist behind the Alternative Market Project. His website is alt-market.com. We'll have the links in the description area. Brandon, thanks so much for coming on Crush the Street and having this conversation with us today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Kenneth.
Okay, so as we're doing this interview, the Dow Jones is down, you know, more than 150 points at the moment. A week ago, we were actually supposed to do this call, and you know, sure enough, the Dow Jones was like down 500 points, a lot of market gyrations going on. And you'd think after a rate cut, we'd see some more injection of juice into the economy rather than what we're having right now. You know, conventionally, if they would have tightened, this would have made more sense, right? This would have been expected to have some sort of, you know, stock market gyrations. But with a rate cut, you know, we're not really seeing that. So has the Fed shot their wad, so to speak, and are they out of ammo to do anything really material to get this economy going?
Well, I think, first of all, I think the Fed is, the Fed's reaction is actually rather muted. I think that they're limiting quite a bit the amount of liquidity that's going into the system, even with overnight repo markets and the repo purchases increasing. Most of what the Fed has done has been the bare minimum. That includes the rate cuts and the repo purchases. With the amount of liquidity that's needed to just to stabilize the markets at this time, the Fed should have introduced QE4 months ago, perhaps 6 to 8 months ago, just after the crash in December. At this point, I think it's too late. There's really nothing that can be done to stop that layman type moment from coming. And, you know, I'm not sure what the exact trigger will be. It could be geopolitical, it could be financial. But it's coming. And I don't think the Fed really intends to do much to stop it. In fact, I think they've actually helped things along by tightening liquidity in the first place and popping the everything bubble. So I don't see the Fed intervening much until after the crash has run its course.
Well, we know there's a lot of headline news that seem to be dictating which way the market is going to go. You know, if things heat up on the China news front, then markets start to trade down. And then if there's any sort of relief, you know, markets bounce back higher. And, you know, we know the current economic situation is fragile. Markets are gyrating. You know, even this impeachment startup is creating some sort of uncertainty in the markets. Let me ask you this. What does the ultimate collapse or reset or major correction, what does it get blamed on by the mainstream media? Who do they blame when this all happens? And does the truth get exposed, or does it have some sort of scapegoat where the elites are able to control the narrative even when everything is collapsing?
Well, I think it's probably obvious to most of your listeners that the narrative on the collapse will be that it was the trade war, or Trump's trade war, that caused the crash. It's pretty much been the primary narrative in the mainstream media for the past year and a half. And I actually warned about this about 2 years ago, maybe 2.5, not long after Trump was elected. I warned that he was going to be set up as the new Herbert Hoover, and a lot of his policies and his policy actions have matched up very closely with Herbert Hoover's policy actions, including major corporate tax cuts, the tariffs and the trade war. A lot of what Trump does matches up with what Herbert Hoover did right before the crash of 1929. So it seems to me that Trump is being set up as the next Herbert Hoover, and Herbert Hoover, of course, took quite a bit of the blame for the crash of 1929 and the Great Depression. Of course, if you studied the history of the Great Depression and the Federal Reserve's involvement in that, you know that it was actually the Fed's tightening of liquidity after they had blown up a huge financial bubble in the 1920s. It was the Fed's tightening of liquidity that caused that bubble to pop. It was the Fed that caused the Great Depression, not Herbert Hoover. Once again, we're seeing the same scenario where the Fed has tightened liquidity for a short period of time, just long enough to pop the everything bubble, and Trump is being set up as the next scapegoat for that crash. And that includes the trade war, Trump's trade war, as a scapegoat for that crash. Now, the problem with this is I don't see Trump as completely innocent or an innocent victim in this scenario, because Trump has consistently taken credit for the stock market bubble, for the false statistics coming out of the Bureau of Labor, and he's also consistently taken credit for increases in GDP, even though we know a lot of those statistics are fake. Trump even said they were fake during his campaign in 2016. But for some reason, once he was in the White House, he decided that he was going to own all of that. He was going to own the market bubble. He was going to own all the fake stats, everything. So he's set himself up as a scapegoat in a lot of ways. So, you know, and a lot of people could debate whether that was knowing or unknowing that he was doing that. Maybe it was witting or unwitting, but the bottom line is he has tied himself so completely to the economy at this point and all of its movements that when it crashes, he will take the blame.
Brandon, I got a question for you. And I'll start it with this. You know, how much of the global wealth that, you know, is circulating at the moment is an illusion? And put differently, you know, when the breakdown really kicks into gear, does what gets lost in the US and Europe and in the West, does it show up in value somewhere else globally? Or does the wealth simply vanish in its entirety? Do you have any insight on this? And, you know, what is going on with global wealth?
Well, I can't speak as much to global wealth as I can to U.S. wealth. I don't have all the stats right in front of me as far as global wealth. But for U.S. wealth, I can say for certain that corporate debt is at all-time historic highs, higher than it was during right before the crash of 2008. I can say that consumer debt is at all-time highs, higher than it was before the crash of 2008. And national debt, of course, is even much even more inflated. It's almost double what it was before the crash of 2008. So in terms of, if we're talking about wealth, a lot of wealth is canceled out by debt. In the end game, wealth is canceled out by debt. Wealth is not, or debt is not wealth. Contrary to popular belief in the mainstream economic media, debt is not wealth. So a lot of our wealth in the U.S. is predicated on the idea that debt has momentum and that debt is tangible and real and that debt creates wealth. That's absolutely false. We saw that in 2008. Nothing has changed in the past 10, 11 years. So once again, we're in a situation where much of our wealth is actually based on massive debt levels. And eventually, you know, that reality comes back to bite us in the ass, basically. There's really no way around it. You can stimulate all you want. You can have QE 4, 5, 6, 7. It doesn't matter. Eventually debt will win. And that's kind of where we're at in the US at this point.
So let's talk about this then. You know, I believe there's about 19 central banks around the world that are in this easing mode. What is the next level of stimulus, in your opinion, that might have a chance of moving the needle in terms of economic results? I mean, what do they need to double down on to get some sort of real material injection of economic stimulus? Helicopter money, you know, balance sheet expansion, interest rate cuts, I mean, outright purchasing of the stock market. You know, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that the Fed and, you know, I can't speak to necessarily to the European Central Bank. It's hard to tell exactly what they'll do. But as far as the Fed is concerned, I think they will refrain from any major stimulus until after the crash has already run its course, until it's hit Main Street so hard that the public is demanding or begging for some kind of response. So that window of time, it's hard to say how long it will take until they respond. I would say probably it would probably be after the election of 2020 by the time they really introduce any kind of massive stimulus. At that point, you know, it's already, as far as I'm concerned, it's already too late. As far as the data and the math is concerned, it's already too late for the Fed to stop the current crash. It's going to continue no matter what they do. Their problem is trying to make it look like they're trying to stop it. They have to make it look like they care. They don't care. I think that this crash is a lead-in to a major, what they would call a global economic reset, and a major changes in the global economic framework and the global monetary framework. And in order to introduce some of the agendas that they've had for decades now, as far as a cashless society, a one world currency, and a one world governance, they have to have some kind of chaotic event that would produce fear, enough fear in the public, that the public would demand that kind of solution.
Brandon, let's talk about precious metals here for a moment. Gold has regained $1,500 and it seems to be, you know, a strong support here at $1,500, even though we've seen it dip below a couple times. What are your thoughts on gold being here at $1,500, silver approaching $18 once again? Is this a sign of what is being reflected in the real economy, the weakness in the real economy being reflected in hard assets at the moment?
Yes, I think so. Gold and silver, I predicted in July that gold and silver would jump in value even if the Fed refrained from large rate cuts or stimulus, which at that time they had refrained from that, and gold and silver prices jumped dramatically. And the reason for that is that gold and silver are not necessarily dependent only on the state of the dollar. They're not only dependent on Fed's, you know, whether the Fed is inflating or tightening policy. It's gold and silver are hedges against economic calamity and also economic fear. So whenever you have a situation as unstable as we have now, financially and geopolitically, people are going to naturally start reverting some of their holdings into commodities, and especially precious metals. So gold and silver are going to continue rising. I think the last drop, this last big drop we saw a couple weeks ago, was primarily due to China being out of the markets for a week because of their golden week, where they're out of everything shut down over there for their holiday. So now they're returning. I think they just returned today. So there's a very good chance that metals will continue to climb from this point on. And with the geopolitical situation, with talks, it looks like talks are going to fall apart between the U.S. and China this month. I predict there won't, even if there are talks, there won't be any kind of substantial deal out of them. And in the event that that happens, gold and silver will rise. And also we have the upcoming Brexit event, which, you know, even if it's postponed, I still think gold and silver will rise due to the uncertainty. So gold and silver, I think right now, are a sure bet.
Brandon, what are your thoughts on something like Bitcoin? Obviously, only 10 years old, very in its infancy. Is this something that you tend to like or tend to be more skeptical about?
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of cryptocurrencies in general, Bitcoin specifically. I will acknowledge certainly that you can make money off of these mechanisms. So if that's your only concern, then, you know, by all means, play that market if you think you can win and make money. As far as, you know, the principle of the thing, I see cryptocurrencies as a beta test for a cashless society, that for the cashless society that the globalists want and prefer. And I don't want to support any kind of system that would lead to that end, to that end game. The history of Bitcoin is very bizarre, and the background of that system, you know, the fact that it matches up almost exactly with NSA papers on a cashless currency system that were written in the mid-90s, the fact that it's based on an NSA hash, you know, the fact that there's, you know, no indication of who the founder of Bitcoin really is. I'm very suspicious of it. And the fact that multiple global banks are pouring money into cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, pouring money into the infrastructure required for it to proliferate, tells me that the bankers are not at all worried about cryptocurrencies. In fact, the IMF has recently put out papers suggesting that we should go to a global cryptocurrency system. So the bankers aren't worried about cryptocurrencies. And the initial argument for cryptocurrencies was to defeat the bankers, was to provide an alternative to the central banking system. Well, that's not happening. And so as far as the activism side of crypto, it's a complete failure. And it's not going to achieve what all the dreamers thought that it would achieve. If you're only going into it to make money, by all means, you know, more power to you. But as far as the activism side, I'm completely unconvinced.
All right, Brandon. Well, thank you so much for your time here at Crush the Street. I really want to give you an opportunity here to just share some closing thoughts, kind of in general, what you would give as advice to people who, you know, are looking at the current situation and, you know, want to take some action, you know, take some action for their life, for their future, for their kids, for their legacy. I mean, all of these things. I mean, we're at such extreme boom and bust times. The consequences of our actions are very magnified, I feel, in this current situation, especially when you consider the transfer of wealth that's going to be taking place as we move forward here. So having said that, please share some closing thoughts for our audience.
Yes. Well, if you're looking for a solution, definitely don't rely on politics. Don't assume that your vote will matter and that your vote will change things. The thing that really changes the world, whenever there is a great change in the world, is individual action. In your own personal life, there are things that you can do that affect the bigger picture. And one of the things that you can do right now is start decoupling from the mainstream system and start setting yourself up as sustainable. Set yourself up as a provider and a producer instead of relying on the mainstream system. And what that means is start learning skill sets that help you to produce necessities, start preparing for worst case scenarios, build community with friends, family, neighbors, whoever you can, people of like mind. Start building that community now so that you have trade avenues, so that you have a community of producers working together just in case there is some kind of a grid down situation or a major financial crash. You have something, you have a system to turn to that you built, not that someone else built, something that you built. And if you can do that, and if millions of people do that, if millions of people in the liberty movement do that, then an economic disaster will not affect you anywhere near as much, or affect the country anywhere near as much as it would otherwise. What we have to do is build redundancies. We have to build alternative systems. And we need to separate from the system that is broken. If we don't do this, then we're doomed. If we do this, then we can fight back. We can set up alternatives that will sustain us at least until we can rebuild the mainstream system into something that works. So that's my solution. And it's a lot of people don't like to hear that. Everybody wants a silver bullet solution to the problem. And I'm here to tell you there is no silver bullet solution to this problem. You have to fix this the hard way. And that means taking individual action and building something for yourself.
I love it. I love it. Well, everyone, check out Brandon's work at alt-market.com. Brandon, thank you again for coming on Crush the Street. I really do appreciate your time. And if people want to learn more about what you do, please let them know a little bit about your website.
Sure. My website is alt-market.com. And I also have a new newsletter called The Wild Bunch Dispatch, which covers more of the solution side and preparedness side of things.
All right, sir. Well, thank you again for coming on Crush.
Thanks for having me.